Jesus's parable of the vineyard, or the wicked husbandman, as it is more traditionally known, is really more of an allegory than a parable. By that I mean that each of its details represents something in particular, and has a significance for understanding the parable, whereas in Jesus's parables usually the parable as a whole makes a more general point. In this parable, a householder planted a vineyard, let it out to tenants, and went to another country. When the season for the grape harvest drew near, he sent his servants to collect his share of the fruit. But his tenants beat and killed those servants, and likewise a second lot of servants. Finally, he sent his own son, thinking that the tenants would respect him, but they reasoned that he was the heir, and if they killed him, they would get his inheritance, so they cast him out of the vineyard and killed him. So, asks Jesus, what will the owner of the vineyard do to those tenants? He will put them to a miserable death, and let the vineyard out to other tenants who will give him the fruits in due season. Here the vineyard represents Israel, the owner of the vineyard is God, the tenants are the chief priests and other Jewish leaders, and the servants are the prophets whom God sent to his people, who were persecuted and killed. The son and heir is, of course, Jesus. Instead of receiving him as Messiah, the Jewish leaders would have him killed. Thus the parable announces judgment upon those leaders, the tenants will be put to death and the vineyard let out to other tenants, just as Jerusalem will be destroyed, and the old Israel will be replaced by a new Israel, that is the early church, as God's people. Some features of the parable seem rather implausible. Would the owner of a vineyard be likely to keep risking the lives of his servants and even the life of his own son, as described here? And would the tenants not have realized that even if they killed the heir, the vineyard would not be theirs, as it would still belong to the Father, with whom one day they would have to reckon? On the other hand, the parable does reflect the situation in first-century Palestine, in which large estates were often parceled up and leased out to tenant farmers. I suspect that in its allegorical details, this parable reflects in large measure how the early church interpreted the events surrounding the rejection and crucifixion of Jesus, followed by the beginnings and development of the Christian community. If we were to look upon this parable simply as an allegory of the events which it represents, it would be of some historical interest, but it would not be very relevant to us today. However, I believe that it is possible to find in this parable a message which speaks to the people of God in every age. In this respect, it is the first two verses which are of crucial importance. The parable is to be found in the Gospels of Matthew, Mark, and Luke, with only small differences between them. In Matthew's version, it opens with the words, "There was a householder who planted a vineyard, and set a hedge around it, and dug a wine press in it, and built a tower, and let it out to tenants, and went into another country. When the season of fruit drew near, he sent his servants to the tenants to get his fruit." There are three things which particularly strike me here. The first is the great care with which the owner did his work. He not only planted the vines, but put a hedge around the vineyard to separate it and protect it from wild animals, he dug a winepress, ready for the grapes to be trodden, and he built a tower that could be used by the vinedressers and those who kept watch against thieves. Everything was there in place for the vineyard to be up and working. If he had always intended to be an absentee landlord, he need not have made such a thorough job of creating it, he could easily have left much of the building work to the tenants. But he clearly took a great pride in his vineyard and did everything that he would have done if he had planned to cultivate it himself. This second thing that stands out is that the vineyard was intended as an investment for the owner and his family. That is doubtless one reason why he made such a thorough job of setting it up. The purpose of the vineyard was to make a profit, and we can infer from the parable that the lease specified what proportion of the fruit was to be kept by the tenants and what proportion was to go to the owner. One small detail of the parable that is unique to Matthew's version is that the owner is referred to as a householder, whereas in Mark and Luke he is simply a man. The description of him as a householder adds just a little support to the thought that he was a family man, and the vineyard was an investment for the benefit of his whole family. He certainly had a son and heir, whom he involved in the business by sending him to collect the portion of the produce that was due to him. The third thing that I particularly notice here is the great trust that the owner placed in his tenants. We cannot tell how well he had known them beforehand, or whether they were complete strangers to him. But he trusted them enough to leave his brand new vineyard in their hands, and to go and live abroad, confident that the tenants would honor the terms of the lease, and deliver his share of the fruit when it was due. One thing that is very clear is that Jesus's parable of the vineyard was very much influenced by Isaiah's parable, which is our Old Testament lesson, and in which Israel is thought of as God's vineyard. Isaiah presents his parable as a love song concerning his beloved, who had a vineyard on a very fertile hill. He digged it and cleared it of stones and planted it with choice vines. He built a watchtower in the midst of it and hewed out a wine vat in it. Do these words not remind you of the great care taken by the man in Jesus's parable in setting up his vineyard? Isaiah's beloved too expected his vineyard to produce a profit. He looked for it to yield grapes, but it yielded wild, more literally bad or stinking, grapes. So Isaiah declares that his beloved will tear down the wall of the vineyard and leave it to be trampled underfoot. As in Jesus's parable, the owner of the vineyard is God, and the vineyard itself represents Israel. Isaiah concludes, "For the vineyard of the Lord of hosts is the house of Israel, and the men of Judah are his pleasant planting," and he looked for justice, but behold, bloodshed, for righteousness, but behold, a cry. Similar imagery is to be found in Psalm 80, where Israel is compared with a vine. You brought a vine out of Egypt. You drove out the nations and planted it. You cleared the ground for it. It took deep root and filled the land. The psalmist goes on to lament that the walls of the vineyard are now broken down, and those who pass by pluck its fruit, and the wild boar ravages it. The essential message that we can take from all these biblical passages is that God entrusts his people with some tremendous resources, then waits for them to produce the fruit due to him. He invests much in the growth of his kingdom, and each one of us is a part of that investment. By living the Christian life and sharing in the work of the church, we can each contribute to the growth of his kingdom. Jesus, using the imagery of the vine, once put it like this: "I am the vine, you are the branches. Those who abide in me and I in them bear much fruit, because apart from me you can do nothing." John 15, verse 5. It is very appropriate that the reading set by the lectionary for today should be concerned with vineyards and vines, because today should be a Communion Sunday for St. Andrew's. Our tradition of celebrating Communion quarterly and at Easter means that every Communion Sunday is a special occasion in the life of our congregation. Unfortunately, in the present situation caused by the coronavirus, because we do not meet for public worship, it is not possible for us to celebrate the sacrament. The way things are progressing as the present time, it looks as though it may well be some considerable time yet before we are once again able to gather around the Lord's table. This only means that when the day comes, as it surely will, when we can safely come together for worship, our first communion service will be all the more of a special occasion. At the Last Supper, Jesus left his disciples with the promise, "I tell you, I shall not drink again of this fruit of the vine until that day when I drink it new with you in my Father's kingdom." Matthew 26, verse 29. We await that day, and in the meantime we look forward to the day when we shall again drink of the fruit of the vine in the presence of Jesus as we observe the sacrament of the Lord's Supper at St. Andrew's.